Welcome back to the Sexual Assault Awareness Month campaign by It's On Us Clemson University. My name is Abigail Anthes, and today we're going to be talking with Grace Brown, a student activist and recent graduate of Clemson University. In this episode, we answer some of your questions and have a candid conversation about a variety of issues and topics surrounding sexual assault. We are not experts, but we want to be real and honest and push others to have conversations like these as well. For more information, resources, and a safe and supportive community, feel free to reach out to us through our Instagram at itsonuscu. Hi, welcome to the podcast. So glad you could join us. Could you start by introducing yourself?
Thank you so much for letting me come on. My name is Grace Brown. I actually just graduated from Clemson this past December, so I am post-grad. I'm from Greenville, South Carolina, so I'm from really close around this area. I was a major in criminal justice, and I minored in psychology and sociology.
So what got you interested and passionate about the prevention of sexual assault and interpersonal violence in the first place?
Yeah, so briefly, I started caring about this topic a long time ago. I am a survivor myself, and so all of those situations happened to me in high school, and I realized going through it myself that there was really no one around me that talked about it, that ever spoke out about the topic of interpersonal violence, and no one that really understood what it was. And so I didn't fully understand what it was, how to handle it, how to be an advocate. When I came to Clemson, I was so desperately seeking out a group of people that did care about it. And thankfully, I found my sorority, Alpha Chi Omega, and our philanthropy was to fight against domestic violence. I walked into the room during recruitment, and that was the first group of women that I had ever heard talking about that at all. Yeah. And standing up against interpersonal violence. Very grateful that I found those women. And through just being in that sorority, I actually was able to serve as the philanthropy chair, which was amazing and so fun and just one of the best experiences I've had in my life. And I was able to give a speech during recruitment, and I kind of touched on my personal experiences and how AKIO really helped me through that. And through that speech, I actually met probably at least 100 women who had similar stories, who had never told their stories to anyone, which was such a crazy experience hearing people say, hey, you're actually the first person I've ever told. I don't even know you, but I'm dying to talk about this. And now I feel like I have a group of people that want to listen.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah, it was extremely powerful and really changed my life for the better. And so really just through that experience, I met so many women on Clemson's campus that were so passionate. Obviously, I found It's On Us, which was life-changing. And I helped do the Women's March.
Yeah.
So that was such a beautiful and fulfilling experience as well. And I had an internship with CUPD. So I really just kind of jumped in headfirst, and I got involved with as many aspects of interpersonal violence prevention that I possibly could. And then being a criminal justice major, that also was my career path. I mean, it very literally is my whole life.
So cool.
And so, yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that I got involved, but I just want to continue to be involved for the rest of my life.
Wow. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more about your experience with the Women's March? And then also, I know you just mentioned you had an internship at CUPD. How did those things come about and what were those like?
Yeah. So that was 2019, 2020, obviously before the pandemic started, but I was doing the internship with CUPD in conjunction with the It's On Us movement that was really at its peak right before the Women's March during the, and still now I believe it's at its peak too. And so me and a group of women just started meeting up. We started talking about the things that we loved about Clemson and the things that we wanted to see be improved on campus. And we all kind of sat in a circle, told our stories. A lot of people had personal experiences with Clemson and how they handled their assault situations. And so we just kind of put our heads together and tried to think of ways that we could improve and ways that we could decrease the number of survivors that we had on our campus, ways that we could communicate that to the university. And so the Women's March, we saw that really make a big impact, not just on our campus, but in our community as a whole. And that was one of the craziest experiences of my life. Standing on the steps, there's pictures. We all wore the jackets, the See Me Too jackets, and standing on the steps and holding hands and then turning around and seeing, I think it was 700 plus people. It was just amazing. And again, I was working with CUPD at the time. And so my goal with that was to see it from all sides. So I was in the midst of the student movement. And then I was also at CUPD every day or almost every day, seeing it from their side.
Yeah.
Because you can't really understand the law enforcement side of advocacy until you're watching it firsthand. And so met a lot of amazing people through that and kind of learning how to find balance between the survivor movement itself and then the people that are kind of in charge of how your assault is viewed in the criminal justice system and how it's handled. It was very, very interesting. I'm so glad I did that. I'm so glad I got to work with law enforcement, and definitely a crazy experience to be doing both at the same time.
So cool. I know we had one question submitted just asking a little bit about what we can expect from the CUPD in terms of improvement through the processes of sexual assault reporting. Do you have any information about that or anything that you'd like to talk about with CUPD and kind of how they're working to make the process easier and better for survivors?
Yeah, I haven't worked with them in a while. Obviously, I'm still in contact with them and I still have a great relationship with them. But from what I do know in a kind of general sense is that the most important aspect to increasing reporting is to build a trust and to build a community and a relationship. And I think that's exactly what they're striving to do. I think even them coming on a podcast like this, and I know they're doing tabling, just making themselves known to the community. You can see their face. You can kind of learn about what their position actually entails. I think that's the most important part, because when it comes to reporting to law enforcement, there is a lot of mystery. And there's not a lot of, you know, information typically about what that's actually going to look like, because it's not CSI, it's not crime shows. I mean, it's just not. And there's also a lot of work that needs to be done within the criminal justice system to make reporting a more productive and positive experience for a lot of survivors. And I think that I'm really, really proud of what CUPD is doing, because they're really building community.
Yeah.
And they're trying to build relationships with the students, with the advocacy organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does take everyone having the same agenda and everyone being on the same page and it being a cooperative effort for that improvement to be made. So I'm excited to see what that does. I really do think it's going to have a positive impact.
Yeah, I think it's really cool, because I was talking with a survivor who went through the process of reporting in their hometown, and their experience with the police there was nothing compared to what CUPD is like. I mean, really, what survivors want is to be heard and to be believed and to be listened to and treated with respect and dignity. And I think that's what CUPD does different than a lot of police departments, is just, even if the case is moving slowly, even if it's taking a long time, they're in constant communication. They are reaching out to the survivors, letting them know that they're still working, letting them know, even if there's not process, letting them know that they're there for them. And there's that open communication and just a sense of caring about them and their case, and not just, hey, this is another thing that was on the back burner for us. They really do care. And I think that speaks volumes to the CUPD department and the ways that they're trying to advocate for survivors.
Yeah. And I think that hearing you talk about that, I heard a lot of people, especially when we were coming closer to the march, saying sometimes it doesn't feel like Clemson is family. And everyone talks about the Clemson family. And I have felt a huge sense of Clemson family, but I also have seen that it has been lacking for some people, specifically when it comes to things that have happened to them or interpersonal violence specifically. I think that it is really important and meaningful when even our law enforcement at the university acts like they just care about you, because we are Clemson family and we do need to take care of one another, even if that means it's within a relationship of law enforcement to student. And I think that they are just moving closer and closer to that. And I think that's going to be really important to a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, if y'all haven't listened, anyone listening to the episode with Michelle Young from CUPD, definitely do that. I think even more than just the information, though, from that episode is knowing Michelle is someone who really does care. She talks with us at It's On Us about how she can do better, how she can be better for survivors. They really are striving for that. CUPD is a place that does want to be for students, for survivors, and make it as least traumatizing or painful or hard as they can. And I think that's really special. Very thankful for that. Another question I know that was submitted was just kind of talking a little bit about what does it look like to be a support system for survivors that are friends? What does it look like to be an ally of survivors, and specifically not making them feel patronized or forcing them to share, but just kind of being there? What would our advice be for that? So I don't know if you have any specific examples or things that you think would be great, but I'd love to hear that too.
Yeah, so I think that the key word that I hear a lot when we're talking about trauma-informed care or being even just a peer advocate to someone else is like the word empathy. And empathy is extremely important, but we also need to acknowledge that not everyone is a natural born empath, and that doesn't make them less than or worse than someone who is an empath, but not everyone is. I've discovered this term called conceptual perspective taking, and I love this term because it's not saying that you need to know what it feels like.
Yeah.
And it's not saying that you need to feel that pain. It's saying that you are trying to comprehend where they're coming from. It's kind of just a fancy way to say walking in someone else's shoes.
Yeah.
Because you have to take into consideration when you're listening to someone's story and when you're helping them heal or whatever they need you to help them with, you have to take into consideration their past. You have to take into consideration their racial identity, their ethnicity, where they're from, if they've had past traumas, their religious beliefs. I mean, you really do have to try to think about all of those things. And you're not always going to know that about someone if they're sharing with you. But the important thing to do is not always try to completely relate. I think that that's kind of a misconception, is when someone's telling you about something they've experienced and you try to make it, I know exactly what you're talking about because this happened to me in this way. And that can be helpful. But I think all survivors want is for someone to just hear them talk. For so many years, no one wanted to listen to my story. And so when I finally did tell my story, and it was on such a grand scale of giving my speech that one year, and it was just simply people hearing my words, it was so healing for me. And just having people acknowledge that what you've been through is painful, or what you've been through is real, because a lot of people in society will try to tell you that what you've been through is not real or not valid. And so just letting them know that you acknowledge what's happened to them, you believe what has happened to them, and you are trying to see where they're coming from, and really just being a good listener is the absolute best thing you can do. And also not trying to question all the ins and outs of what happened, not trying to dig into all the details unless they're sharing that with you off the bat, because you're not an investigator. You're literally just listening to them. Instead of trying to give advice or solve the problem, I think it's just, you're just there, and they need to just vent, and you need to let them know that you're there for them and that you believe them. And I think that simple is better when it comes to advocating for a friend or just a peer, anybody.
Yeah, for sure. I think too, is the idea that it's not just about, like you said, giving advice. I know for me, I heard a lot of people saying, well, how are you going to get justice? How are you going to report this? When are you going to do that? Pushing me to report, pushing me to do things that to them seemed like they were really helping me, but really just put a lot of pressure and fears and things on me that I wasn't really ready for. And so I think that idea of just listening is so important. And it sounds silly because for so many other things, it is our first response. When our friends share things like, hey, I had a really hard day, for us to say, oh yeah, I've been through that same thing, or to say, hey, my friend and I are having some fights, for us to relate and kind of give that same experience. But I think when we're talking about sexual assault, it is just so different than any other experience. Even if a survivor is talking with another survivor, no person is going to have that same exact experience. And to share is so important and so vulnerable and so terrifying. And I think it is so important to really just listen. And not share and try to relate in that way, but really just listen and believe. And I know it's talked about so much how important it is to believe survivors, and it almost feels like we're beating a dead horse, like saying it over and over and over, and it's just a part of every movement and phrase you see on social media. But I think it'll be the number one thing that we need to talk about changing and implementing until it's just so second nature, and it's our first response to when a survivor shares. Because really, I mean, even as a survivor, it's almost just in the back of my head. I have the questions. I have the, well, what if, and what if she had done this differently, or what were the circumstances? And I think we see that in a lot of different things going on right now with Black Lives Matter. People want to question and victim blame, when really that doesn't even make sense. It's not a part of the story. That's not a part of the survivor's experience. Yes, those things all might have been added to their trauma, but I think the most important thing is to just listen and believe. And I know it's so much easier said than done, but until it is our first response, it needs to be said over and over again.
And I think a lot of that comes from the believing a survivor in society is oftentimes not the first jerk reaction. It's kind of the opposite. It's believing that, are you sure? Or are you sure it wasn't this? Or are you positive you remember that? And I think that a lot of that comes from people still haven't fully accepted and acknowledged that that evil is so prevalent in the world.
Yeah.
That it happens so often. And that the definition of sexual assault is actually a lot different from what people's perception of it is.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with many different factors, but the media, it's always shown as some scary criminal guy in an alley, and it's a stranger, and you're alone, and it's dark at night. Unfortunately, that has been ingrained in our brains that that's sexual assault because that's inherently evil.
Yeah.
But some other definitions of sexual assault don't really sound inherently evil to some people. It sounds like, well, you have a relationship with that person, or that's your friend, or you were under the influence. So how could that actually? So I think that people compartmentalize the idea of it in their mind. And they think that for it to be real, it has to be so obviously evil and wrong. And I think that for people who don't fully understand the ins and outs of what interpersonal violence is, it's just hard to grasp the concept that sexual assault is such a broad term, because it can happen to people in so many forms, environments, you know, within different dynamics of relationships. And so I think that believing and also changing our perception of what assault really is go hand in hand. And also just knowing the research, knowing the numbers, knowing the statistics of how many people it happens to. For someone like you and me, we know those numbers. We know that it's true. We know that it's 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 or whatever the numbers are for the different types of victimizations. Of course, we're going to believe someone because we know that it happens to so many people and so often. And also knowing the statistics of false reporting, that statistic is so incredibly low. Most people don't lie about stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the people that do lie about it are oftentimes blamed for why survivors aren't believed all the time. But you don't know the whole story all the time. And you need to do your research. You need to know the statistics on that are so low.
Yeah.
And when you know that, you have no reason not to believe as your first instinct.
Yeah. And I think for survivors, even, I know it is incredibly hard to even just believe yourself and your own experience. I mean, it's something that happened to you, you experienced, and still, because of society, because of the people around you, you're still questioning, well, I don't know, was that what I thought it was? Like, did that really happen the way I feel like it did? So I think it's important to believe, because even survivors question themselves, because that's what we're told and trained to do. But it's so important to just know and understand those statistics. But even more than any number, we can give you numbers, but at the end of the day, it's choosing whether or not you want to care and you want to believe and you want to support people despite you understanding every single thing. I think that's the other thing, is we want to have control, we want to understand, but a lot of these stories are not things that we can understand fully, whether it's, oh, it was a boyfriend, or she didn't say no, or she didn't do this or do that. And those things might not make sense to us on paper, but we didn't walk through that experience.
Exactly.
And so it's not our place to ever say, well, what if, because at the end of the day, we didn't walk through that. We weren't in those exact circumstances. So really it is just choosing to say, I'm here for you. I'm listening. I don't understand, but I care and I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree.
I know another really important topic is just feeling sometimes in the overwhelming numbers and statistics. How do we do anything to prevent this or change this almost just epidemic of sexual assault and abuse? And what steps can we do or take? And I know a really, really big and important one is just education on preventing interpersonal violence. So I didn't know if you wanted to touch on that any, but I'd love to hear that.
Definitely. And what you said is exactly right. It is so deeply ingrained in our culture and in our society, you know, rape culture and the way women are treated and seen as not equal in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. That is so deeply ingrained. And so when you look at it as a whole, big picture, you're like, there's no way I can make a difference because this is just, it's too far gone. It's too deep. And I mean, it's true that it's going to take a lot of work. And women have been fighting for this for decades, hundreds of years, forever. there are improvements that have been made, but there's also improvements that need to be made, and there probably will always be. But I think in a very broad sense, in my opinion, education is the most important aspect to prevention.
Yeah.
I know in my personal experience, like I just said, I'm from Greenville, South Carolina. I'm from the South. And I don't know if it really has much to do with where I'm from, but I know that I never heard it spoken, like it was never talked about until I came to school. And honestly, the first time I heard anything about it was CE 1000. Now, not trying to completely knock CE 1000, but that was still only talked about in a very short, quick, simplistic way. We weren't taught the ins and outs of what that could look like we were talking about earlier, the different forms it can take. And so I didn't know a single thing about it. And again, when I experienced it in high school, I really didn't know what was going on. And the people around me had no idea what was going on. So I wasn't really given a fair chance to start that healing process for myself when I probably needed to right away. I genuinely believe that if we were to start teaching middle school kids, high school kids, even about broad topics like how to treat people with kindness and equality, what a healthy relationship looks like, how to stand up for yourself and how to stand up for others when things just don't feel right, you know, racial injustice, things like that. Just talking about it and introducing concepts at a younger age, I really think that would make a huge difference. I think that a lot of assault, the age that's most prevalent when assaults happen to people, are 18 to 25. And so let's start talking to people about it when they're 13 or 14. Imagine if they had to take a mandatory class, or they had mandatory curriculum within their sexual health class about that when they're 14. Imagine how many of those instances would be erased in the future. And it wouldn't completely solve the problem, but I do think it would make a big impact. And I think that sex education is lacking. I know my sex education began and ended at abstinence.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a little more nuanced than that. I think that it's, let's talk about how to treat people, and let's talk about this crime that happens to 1 in 3 women. I mean, let's talk about that, because I think that if it is so prevalent and if it is so real, why are we ignoring it until it's almost too late? Is kind of how I think about it. And even translating, let's say there's a lesson on physical boundaries in terms of before you give someone a hug. Ask them, can I give you a hug? Or before you play with their hair, just little things like that, that people in a certain age group could understand better. That conversation will translate later in life to other conversations about consent when it comes to interpersonal relationships, even just introducing things like that. And I know that it would have to be done in a very gradual way, and that's completely understandable, but even starting at a place like that and just teaching younger people how to communicate in a healthy way, like you said, just how to respect one another in general. You hope that parents are teaching their children that, but some people are looking to examples that don't necessarily respect other people, or who have, you know, biases that change the way that they speak or act towards a certain group of people. And so I think that schools hold a lot of power, and our education system holds a lot of power. And if I ever work with pushing policy, that'll be my number one. I don't know if I would ever do that, because politics is just something that I'm terrified of. But I think that education is just such a tool that we don't use as we should.
Yeah, for so many issues too. I think in terms of history with racial relations and lack of representation in schools, those things are also all intertwined, because if you don't have that understanding, you're not going to understand so many other issues. And it really is just all so interconnected. And if we avoid those things and we're not addressing those issues, there are so many other places where we're going to fall short. So it is important to address those things and make those a part of school, make those a part of life that kids are learning and understanding.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, is there anything else that you just want anyone who's listening to this episode to hear or understand before we end?
I mean, I could talk about this for probably 10 years straight, but I'm sure no one wants to listen to that. So I'm really happy that we talked about the things that we talked about. I think that a lot of people can relate to things that we shared, and it's really cool just to have open and honest back and forth about this topic. Again, this is what I longed for so many years, was literally to just have a conversation with someone who agreed with my beliefs. And Clemson is growing and changing by the minute, and I couldn't be more proud of the community's efforts. I couldn't be more proud of the student efforts. I've just seen such a huge improvement in the way people are speaking up against what's wrong and speaking their mind and standing up for each other. And yeah. I think that it's so beautiful. And I'm so excited to see the community continue to grow upwards. And I think that that will happen. I do genuinely believe that. And I just appreciate so much you letting me get on this platform. I'm no expert. I wish I was, but I'm not. And so I appreciate you giving me a platform to speak and letting me come on here. I'm so proud of It's On Us. I'm so glad you guys are doing this. And I'm so excited to see where this takes you guys in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm not an expert by any means as well. I think that's the important thing too, is to know that you might not have all the right answers or say all the right things, but to have those conversations is still important. And to anyone who maybe feels like they don't know the right things to say or do, if you just care, if you just are willing to listen and believe and care, that's enough. And that's a good starting point. So I think really it is just important to understand, yes, this is a really daunting, overwhelming, big issue, and it's real. But also, if we just start, as simple as it is to just listen and believe and love people, that's where we're gonna be able to make a difference. And yes, all the policy changes and the advocating and the sit-ins and the protesting, those things are awesome and really, really important. And I'm so proud of the different things we've been able to accomplish. But even more than that, just if every person chose to believe and listen and love the people around them, that would be a game changer. So I think that's where each person listening needs to start, is just examining your own self. When you hear a survivor share their story, what is your first response? Are you questioning things, or are you just caring? And how can you love people better? So if you're asking yourself those questions, I think that's a good place to be. But we're really thankful for you, Grace, and excited for all the things you're going to do, because I know just you're going to change the world. So I'm excited.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's so sweet.
Thanks again for listening. We only scratched the surface, but we hope this episode was informative, encouraging, and uplifting. If you have any topics or questions you would like to hear answered, feel free to reach out to us on our Instagram @itsonusceo.